This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Brian Johnson, Federal Affairs Manager at Americans for Tax Reform. Recently, he's been looking at the major differences still to be resolved between the House and Senate versions of financial regulatory reform legislation. And Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me.
Is there one bill here that's worse or better than the other, or is it a hodgepodge as to which bill from which chamber is the more alarming to you?
Kind of like the bad, the badder, and the uglier. It really doesn't get any better between the House-passed bill and the Senate-passed bill, except in a few instances. One specifically that we're concerned about is the government regulation of credit and debit card transaction fees. The House bill does not change the current law. However, the Senate would allow the government to regulate fees placed on debit card transactions. This would basically be the first time the government kind of steps in and standardizes debit card transaction fees and issue rules on the fees that merchants pay and granting oversight on essentially all banking transactions between consumers and merchants.
And what kind of changes are they looking to push here?
Well, they're looking to standardize the credit fees. What the Durbin, Senator Durbin, this is his amendment, he said restrictions they wouldn't apply to banks or credit unions with less than $10 billion in assets. But what it does is it applies to large institutions that says that you can only charge X amount of money if a vendor chooses to offer debit to its customers, and you can only charge X amount of money if that vendor chooses to offer credit to its customers. It's essentially the government stepping in and regulating a contractual private arrangement between a merchant and a vendor, and that's never happened before. It's extremely big brothery of them.
Brian, one of the biggest points of contention over the past several months has been whether or not there ought to be this fund by which it's designed to make sure that taxpayers aren't on the hook. Others call it a permanent bailout fund. The House bill has it. The Senate bill doesn't. In the end, which side do you think is going to win?
I think the fund probably stays in. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be privy of a lot of the conversations that are happening. Currently, we don't know if this is going to be an open or a closed reconciliation session. The bad part for the Americans and where they get the short end of the stick, so to speak, is there'll probably be some speeches made openly, on C-SPAN about everyone's working together and negotiations are going smoothly. But all the deal making, all the, Cornhusker kickback type backroom deals will all be done behind the scenes, off the camera, without any transparency.
We're talking with Brian Johnson of Americans for Tax Reform. And Brian, in terms of the overall increase in government regulation, government oversight, in terms of just general freedom for the consumer, we can talk about banks as part of this as well, I guess, if you'd like to. How much is that increasing, the government oversight and perhaps government intrusion, as some might see it, into our personal affairs and in the affairs of the banking system?
Well, it's essentially increasing from a minimalistic involvement where the government stands for. They are involved. There are regulations. There are financial regulations, and institutions must meet certain standards to lend, et cetera. What this bill will do is it requires private financial institutions, your BB&T, your Wachovia down the street, to collect data on every individual personal bank deposit. So when your 16-year-old son deposits a check for mowing the lawn, that's entered into a database that the banks must now turn over to the federal government. The bill says that they will use this data and geocode and geotrack this data, and they will run it parallel with the Census Bureau. So they're going to figure out exactly which households these deposits came from, and they're going to link this data together in a national database. This has never been done in history.
Brian, another issue that came up, I believe, in both the House and Senate sides of the debate, I know the Senate took this up, was a potential audit of the Federal Reserve. This has been looked at not favorably by the Fed because they see themselves as separate to a large extent from the rest of the government. But what are we going to see? Will there be a serious investigation as to exactly what they're doing with their money?
Yeah, the House allows audits of the Fed, allows GAO to audit the Fed, and the Federal Reserve is also prevented from putting money into financial institutions. Now, that's in the House-passed bill. The Senate bill allows a one-time GAO audit of the Fed and gives the Fed the authority to retain oversight over smaller and regional banks. But it still allows the Fed to break apart and disperse large banks and companies that, quote, pose a threat to the financial system. So obviously the Senate passed bill gives the Fed much more authority, much more flexibility, can try to, business as usual, sort of. The House obviously puts the Fed under more oversight and allows continual audits of the Fed and prevents them from breaking up and dispersing these financial groups that they determine are a, quote, threat. You know, these are going to be politically sensitive institutions that, depending on who's in power, the Fed's going to keep around or break up.
We should point out that these 12 differences, significant differences between the House and Senate versions of the bill, are available online at ATR.org. And, Brian, based on your initial response saying that neither of these bills has much positive to offer, my guess is you're hoping that there might be a little bit of gridlock here, but since all the conferees basically are Democrats, is that really a legitimate possibility?
Yeah, it's really not. Something's going to pass, and the problem is, is the bad bill going to pass or is the worst bill going to pass? So we're just keeping our eyes and ears open. We're hoping to get some of these changes made through conference and through working with members and obviously making sure we educate the public about everything we're doing.
And last question before we let you go. A lot of the members of Congress we've talked to, in addition to the fund, which is now in the House bill and not in the Senate bill, is the issue of credit to small businesses. And obviously they see that as the engine of economic recovery rather than government spending. How much does this bill, if passed in either the House or Senate version, impact access to credit?
While it increases access to credit on face, there actually will be less money to lend because this bill pays banks to advertise to low-income and otherwise risky individuals who never would have gotten a loan to begin with. The government backs the loan. So if the bank issues the loan to the risky creditor, if they pay it back, the bank wins. If they default, the bank still wins because the government has backed and insured the loan. So when you institutionalize and make permanent the same risky lending practices that led to Fannie and Freddie in the first place, because of these risky applicants obtaining credit, they're going to poison and damage the market so that the otherwise available small business loans will start to be restricted by banks.
Brian, fascinating to watch. We'll see how it all turns out. Thanks very much for being with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Brian Johnson is Federal Affairs Manager at Americans for Tax Reform. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.